Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Tuesday, February 23rd, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Well, while we wait to Greg Hunter will be joining us about 4:10, he'll be joining us. Let's first go to the market report. Wow, gold had a good day today.
Yep.
Came back, stayed strong above that $1,200 level that I've been looking at. And we have gold in New York spot aftermarket up $17 at $1,226, only $2 off the high for the day. Silver was up $07 at $1,533. Platinum was up $15 at $947. Palladium was up $4 at $500. And three, the USDX today was trading a little bit slightly stronger, 0.05, 97.45. Crude oil was down 1.49 at 31.90. Paper markets today, pressure all day. You know, it was another one of those days where it was down, 160 points at the get-go. 160, 170 points at the get-go, and it was just didn't budge all day. The Dow was down 189, 16,431, down 1.14%. The NASDAQ is down 67, 4503. The S&P down 24, 1921. 10-year yield still holding at that 174 level. Euro 110, a little pressure on that. European markets, Germany, London, down over 1%. Germany was down about a little over 1.5%. Not a lot of action in the Asian markets, mainly in the European markets. So, it's just a kind of odd market. The focus is all on truly the elections and oil. Oil and the elections.
Well, I don't know what to say about that, Melody. The thing that interests me about the market just in the last couple of weeks, we had a significant drop in the price of gold on President's Day. Monday, I believe that was Monday a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
That happened in the foreign markets. Foreign markets dropped gold, I don't remember, $40? Significant decline in the foreign markets. Yesterday, we had a significant, wound up being a $20 decline or something. But most of that decline took place in foreign markets before the U.S. market opened. Monday, foreign market. I'm beginning to, it's scant evidence, but it's the sort of thing that makes me wonder if a primary source of market manipulation may be in the foreign markets right now to a lesser degree than has been true in the past. I mean, in the past, you expected out of London, you expected out of New York, but you didn't expect it out of the foreign markets. Now we see evidence, you know, just a couple of Mondays. It's not enough to prove anything, but it still suggests that forces that are involved in market manipulation are now operating in foreign markets where it wasn't necessarily so much the case in the past.
Well, you can never, you know, China has a way of getting into markets when they're looking to purchase something. They've done it before in a lot of the other commodities. They've done it in soybeans and so forth. They can go in there. They have enough. They're big enough to hit the market. They can come in and scoop it all up and end up hoarding it. So, you know, to say that they didn't do it for gold and so forth. But it's, you know, all markets can be rigged the way the whole system works anymore. With the way things can be traded and so forth. Absolutely. It's a lot easier to rig markets today than it was 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. So,
well, I don't know whether it's easier now or it's easier then. Then you could rig the markets. You could do it the old-fashioned rigging where it wasn't obvious to the public. Nowadays, you rig the markets. Everybody cares.
Applauds.
Rigging the markets, you know. What's that, news or something? The thing about rigging the markets, again, is that when the markets are rigged in order to keep them relatively high, the public invests in the stock market, not because they're investing in stocks based on fundamentals, but they're investing essentially in the Federal Reserve's ability to continue to hold the markets up. And say, the game is rigged. How can we lose? Right? Let's invest. It's like going to Las Vegas and playing in the casino when you know that it's going to come up red 17 on the next spin of the roulette wheel. Why not bet? Game is rigged. As the evidence of rigging declines and people say, wait a second, I'm not guaranteed to leave this game with a smiley face. You know, I'm not guaranteed to win anymore. We're going to see people start to drop out of the markets. I'm hearing.
We have Greg Hunter.
All right, good. Greg Hunter from USA.
Yes, we do. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great, Greg. Thank you.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Forget it.
No, it's all right. Glad to have you here. Here's to get into some of the questions. How close are we to an actual invasion by Turkey from the north, and by the 350,000-man army fielded by Saudi Arabia to the south of Syria? Do you think there's going to be a real invasion?
Well,
or just rattling swords?
At the moment, we have a ceasefire that happened Saturday. At the moment. Now, I don't think that this ceasefire will hold by any imagination. This just goes back to Sunni Shia at its core, which is Shia, Hezbollah, Iran, and Syria, and, you know, Russia. They just have a base there in Tartus, and a long ally of Syria, which is Shia. And then you have Sunni, which is, you know, Attar and Saudi Arabia, and, you know, 85% of the Arab world doesn't want to see Iran's influence expanded. And so they have this peace agreement that they reported that they have a peace agreement, but, you know, the fighting parties have to agree to it, and they haven't agreed to it. Russia and the U.S. has, but the people really knocking them out fighting have not agreed to it. I mean, Russia is supplying air support, but not troops, but Russian air power is, you know, significant. It's like the U.S. supplying air power and having a base in country. So how close are we? It goes into effect Saturday, this peace agreement. I don't suspect it will last, I don't know, a week. I don't even know if it'll even be really fully implemented for real. Because the warring parties are Saudi Arabia and you know, the Shia and Sunni arch enemies, and you know, this Iran peace deal, as I predicted, that it would be no deal, and there's nothing in writing. And that would ratchet up tensions, and that's exactly what's going on. Nobody has seen the deal. There's nothing in writing.
It's kind of like
a copy of the deal.
Patriot Act.
Well, the Patriot Act, you can actually read the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
Well, you can actually read the Patriot Act. I mean, it's in writing. It's passed by Congress. It's signed by the president. Well, yes, and here you have Donald Trump talking and saying that we're supposed to come in on the side of Iran if Israel whacks Iran. We're supposed to protect Iran. That's what Donald Trump said the other night on TV. I was reticent to say that because nothing is in writing. And, you know, according to this is another pet peeve of mine, and this is not what I think. This is what the State Department, John Kerry State Department, sent Mike Pompeo, a congressman, and said, "We'd like to have a copy of the deal. We'd like to see it with the signed deal." And the State Department told Pompeo that the congressman from California, I believe he is, that there's nothing in writing. And, you know, we have the snapback sanctions. Well, what did you see in the news a few weeks ago? Iran going on this deal tour all over the EU, cutting multi-billion-dollar deals. Do you think the sanctions are going to snap back and they're going to kill these multi-billion-dollar deals all over Europe?
Business is business.
And the answer is no.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing is that, listen, I remember reporting on this in, I don't know, 13. And I got good sources, UK Telegraph, the Guardian UK, both of them are international sources, actually from Britain. And they were talking, there were stories about how Saudi Arabia was, buying nuclear weapons from Pakistan, which are big, you know, Sunni allies. Pakistan has a nuclear weapon, and now we have reports of that supposedly some Saudi officials are bragging they have nuclear weapons. That's like you bragging, you know, you've got a bolt-action hunting rifle, and the guys you're bragging it to have a full armament of semi-automatic and fully automatic weapons. That'd be the Russians. You know, Russia sent their a guided brand-new cruise missile carrier to the Eastern Mediterranean. They have already supposedly in back channels say if you try to invade, we will use, and we feel we're going to be overrun, we'll use tactical nuclear weapons. It's bad. So your question, you know, how close are they? Well, they've bought some time with this so-called ceasefire that apparently the people actually fighting haven't agreed to. The Sunni and Shia folks have not, you know, agreed to it. You know, the Sunni Free Syrian Army, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, which we've been funding, it's pretty clear the U.S. and NATO has been funding them. NATO countries such as Turkey have been buying their oil and facilitating, you know, the funding of these guys with their oil. We've lost some time. But now the Sunnis are losing, and they're afraid that Iran is going to have a sphere of influence, you know, just like Persia used to have from, you know, Iraq is largely governed by Shia Muslims. And Syria is governed by Shia, even though the population is 70% Sunni. Sounds complicated, I know. And the Sunnis are freaking out because they're, you know, the Shia and Sunnis hate each other more than anybody. It's frightening.
You're talking about civil war in a sense. You have the equivalent of civil war. And in the final analysis, when you go to civil war, that is as much trouble as you can get into. Other than maybe holy war, we don't really hate the Germans
war.
The way we hate people in our own country who we go to war with. You know, in our own community, there's a sense of betrayal that you don't attach when you're fighting Japan, you're fighting Germany, you're fighting some foreign country. You don't have the same sense of betrayal when you're fighting internally, and that's what's happening in the internal conflict and within the Muslim faith. That can inspire some real rage.
It's a holy jihad war. I mean, but then you have countries like Turkey, which is a NATO country. And if Turkey invades northern Syria and Russia, you know, drops some tactical nukes on them, what then? You know, it's like the Three Musketeers, one for all for one. Who's going to come to Syria's side if they get nuked? This is a dicey situation. I read in the, of course, this story is on the back pages of my local newspaper, and I don't even know if they even covered it on the USA Today. Maybe they covered it last week, but it's a dicey ceasefire that supposedly takes hold Saturday. I don't know if it'll go a week. I don't know if anybody will even abide by it. I don't know.
We've got 350,000 troops and several hundred tanks and aircraft and whatever, maybe several thousand, I don't remember the numbers, lined up in northern Saudi Arabia, poised to supposedly invade Syria. But they said the exercise would be over by the end of February. Does that mean that if they invade before March 1st, any threat of invasion is off? Or does it mean they can wait another week or, you know, a month or whatever, and they'll just park the troops up there?
Let's explain it to everybody. They have an exercise that was been put on by Saudi Arabia, a large exercise in the border between Saudi Arabia and Syria. And there's other multiple Arab countries involved. Of course, the biggest, Saudi Arabia, had the biggest arms buy in the history of their country, and I think one of the biggest ones in the history of the world, $60 billion, we sold to Saudi Arabia back in, I think, 12. I mean, they bought everything, F-15s, and they bought tanks, machine guns. They bought everything that you possibly need and for a large war. And they weren't buying them for Israel. I mean, they don't, at this point, the Saudis and the Arab world is not lining up and encircling Israel as they did in 67 and 73. The big boogeyman now is Iran, and we have certainly strengthened their hand by handing them over. I mean, think about this. There is no signed deal. The State Department says there's no signed deal. We handed them over $150 billion. I mean, that's just crazy stupid. Would you do a deal if not signed and hand over the money with no signature?
Well, if it was somebody else's money, I suppose I might. Or if it wasn't even money, if it was just an illusion,
why? I don't know
if
they got out of it. What did the Obama administration even get out of it? I don't know. They've inflamed that. Are they trying to get a war going in the Middle East? I mean, I just wonder if that is what they're doing.
That was one of my questions.
Are they just acting like they're stupid?
That was one of my questions. If war erupts in the Middle East, will the world slide into that war by accident or by intent? Are there people that are we just looking at a bunch of morons? The Three Stooges are trying to control the Middle East, or are they intentionally building this up to where a nuclear war is likely?
I think when you there's a guy by the name of Jim Sinclair, and one of his sayings, which I think is priceless, is when he finds something too stupid to be stupid.
Yeah.
And I think what they're doing is too stupid to be stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, ISIS is, we left all this equipment behind in Western Iraq, and maybe there was a free Syrian army at one time, but, you know, when Russia starts hunting these people down like dogs, and we can tie these oil sales to ISIS being handled through a NATO country. I mean, I did something, you know, about a month ago or so, where they bought a truck out of the Houston auto, out of the auto auction, a plumbing truck that said Mark's Plumbing with his phone number. The truck is sold at auction, but the dealership got rid of it. There's a picture of it with a ISIS-mounted machine gun on the back of it in Syria, and it came from Houston to Turkey to Syria. And the company that had the truck says, well, we're getting all these hateful calls, and we have our truck there, and we sold this, traded it for a new truck. We have no idea it's there. I'm sure the dealer that sold it at auction had no idea somebody would buy it, but it got an export license to Turkey. And they left the logo on it. It was a truck with 250,000 miles, but you don't really – this isn't something that you're going to put your family in to drive to Connecticut in. I mean, this is something you're going to mount a machine gun on. Does the motor run? Yep. Okay, great. Mount this 30-caliber machine gun on the back of the bed. Tear the gate off. Thank you. I mean, so that's what obviously the U.S. is helping to arm ISIS. I mean, this is hard for me to say, but you can't come to any other conclusion.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll talk about that when we return. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we will be back with our guest, Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and our guest is Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com, who has built himself a reputation for interviewing some of the most intelligent, articulate, and forthright people that you can be, that you can find on the internet, and certainly as compared to mainstream media, you can get hard-hitting news from Greg on a regular basis. Again, USAWatchdog.com. I have a question about World War III, Greg. We are constantly talking, we're hearing, oh my gosh, we might have World War III break loose in Syria in the next days or weeks. Are we really in danger of World War III, or are we just facing a regional war, a Middle East war, a regional war, but not world war? Because I think of world war, it must include the United States, Russia, probably China, maybe NATO. I don't see those four forces going into Syria. Well, Russia is already there, but I don't see them going in from the perspective of being in World War. Do you get what I'm saying? Is World War III an exaggeration, or is it an accurate description of the threat we're facing?
It is a distinct possibility. If you remember, France is in there, was flying sorties against ISIS, and so is Great Britain, and so is the U.S. And here's the big fly in the ointment. It is Turkey. Listen, if we have no duty to go in and really help Saudi Arabia, although the duty we have is that they basically prop up the petrodollar. And Alfred, I'll tell you, if the petrodollar goes away, and Iran just made a deal where they were selling their oil in anything but U.S. dollars, okay? And, you know, you're talking about some things that could happen with all this debt. I mean, we don't have a robust, strong economy. I mean, you keep getting these bombardment if you read the mainstream press, and if you read, listen to CNBC, oh, things are great. Oh, no, we're great. And, you know, the president, oh, if you're saying the economy is bad, you're peddling fiction, quote-unquote, peddling fiction, unquote. That's not fiction. Things are not good. The global economy is not good. The debt situation is not good. Deutsche Bank is in deep trouble. Deep trouble. They make Lehman Brothers look like a subsidiary in Omaha, Nebraska.
And
here we have, go ahead.
Well, you've got Deutsche Bank in Germany. A lot of people would suppose that the problems with Deutsche Bank, if they've even heard about them, are likely to only affect Germany or the European Union. But Deutsche Bank is big enough to affect the United States and the entire global economy. Or is it? Is it big enough to affect global economy?
Yeah, without question, because of the interconnectedness. Yes, because of the interconnectedness of banks. I mean, plus, if you take a look at what's happened with our banks, I mean, everybody is like, woohoo, we got, you know, $1.50 gallon gas or whatever it is in your area, whatever, you know, it's below $2 in most places, and which is great unless you have made loans to the oil companies, and a lot of big U.S. banks have, and you have J.P. Morgan just out recently saying that we got to put more loan loss reserves. I mean, this is all really shaky stuff. I mean, the banks are already they were never fixed. And Deutsche Bank, on top of it, has $70 trillion-plus in derivatives and a German economy of $3.8 trillion. Now, let that sink in. $70 trillion of leverage for one bank in an economy that has a $3.8 trillion gross domestic product. That's Germany. So what is that, 20 times, 25 times, 20 to 18 times leverage of an entire country, one bank?
It's the size of the global economy. It's the size of the global GDP, right, or roughly?
Yes, roughly. Their derivative positions the size of the global economy. That's one bank. And, you're talking about World War III. And listen, NATO being involved, and that's the U.S. where we said that we're going to have boots on the ground. We have 3,700, service people in Iraq. And we do have NATO, and we have an air base in Turkey. And what do you think we're going to do if Turkey invades northern Syria and Russia drops some tactical nukes on them while we have an air base and they're a NATO member? That's the problem. Whereas what happens if somebody decides to, drop some tactical nukes on Saudi Arabia, off that ship out in the eastern Mediterranean, the Russian brand-new cruise missile ship, which is certainly within their range. And what are we going to do if that destroys the petrodollar? What are we going to do? It's very dicey, very hugely dicey in an already very weak economy where the Fed is talking now about negative interest rates. And when they were telling us, the economy is strong enough to raise interest rates in December, and now, not so much. And then you have James Bullard out of St. Louis Fed talking about how they'll have more QE if needed. Well, that's not a growing economy where you got to keep propping it up. And then you have these these big companies buying their own stocks. I'm sure some of them think it's a great deal, but some of the banks like Citi and the CEOs of Citi and J.P. Morgan, which is Jamie Dimon, buying millions of dollars in shares in their stocks to prop it up. And the stories that you see in the mainstream press say, you know, the executives are propping up their, you got to prop something up. Doesn't that mean it's wobbly and it's going to fall? And that is the economic backdrop we find ourselves in. Well, that's what it's not good. And, you know, I have some people that say this is a pattern over and over again. When the economy gets dicey, when the economy gets bad, the leaders take you to war. Oh, look, it would have been good. Our policies were working, the Fed would say, or the European Central Bank. Oh, we got involved in this war. Oh, we had a dirty bomb attack. We got involved in a huge regional war or world war. It could turn, that what you're asking about turning into a global, a world war can happen. I mean, we have NATO involved in Turkey, and I don't think Turkey really cares one way or the other that they feel threatened by a Iran that is basically has taken over already. They're in charge of Iraq, and they're in Shia, Iran, backed by Iran and Hezbollah, are in Syria, and Turkey is not keen on that. And that is a Hatfields and a McCoy Sunni-Shia conflict that goes back hundreds of years to nearly the beginning of Islam. So
yeah,
that's a very dicey situation. And the backdrop is a very weak economy with the Baltic Dry Index, which is the measurement of basically raw materials being shipped around the world. Back in 2008 and 2007, it was somewhere in the 12,000 range, the Baltic Dry Index, and now it's 300. Not 300,000, not 30,000, it's 300, like 300. So the index has fallen, and the global economy has crashed. It's fallen and can't get up. And
on a percentage basis,
says, hey,
on a percentage basis, how much has the Baltic Dry Index lost? Do you know? Do you have a rough idea on the?
Well,
I'm guessing it's 95%.
That's somewhere in that neighborhood. 10%, if it's 12,000, goes 12, it would be 1,200, that'd be 10%. You're talking 3, so it's about 97%. It's fallen from its high. It's at all-time lows since it was invented in 85 or 86, the Baltic Dry Index. It's at all-time lows. It's up a little bit. It sunk below 300 for a while, and then it's up above 300, but not much. I mean, it's way off. That's just one indication of how bad the global economy is doing, and we live in a global community, and we have global banking, and that's why all this stuff is interconnected. So it's very complicated.
FNW published an article entitled 21 New Numbers Show That the Global Economy is Imploding. Now, I'm not going to try to list them.
That's Michael Snyder from the Economic Collapse blog.
All right. Are there any new numbers or signs that signal the global economy is doing okay or even just getting a little stronger? Do we have any good news? Is there a silver lining on the cloud?
I hate to tell you this, but the answer is no.
Yeah.
Not in the macro scale. I mean, is there a tech company with a new product out? I'm sure there's going to be, you know, is there a biotech company that has a new, procedure or a new drug out? Sure, I'm sure stuff like that will happen. But overarching, are the banks healthy? The global big no, they're not. Is the bond market healthy? No, it is not. Are we looking at a peaceful resolution to the Middle East? Not that I can see. No, somebody has to completely back down for there to be a peaceful resolution, and I don't see it in the Middle East. Somebody has to completely back down and say, "Okay, you win." That's not going to happen. And Michael Snyder is the guy you talked about with the 21 signs. He is my guest tomorrow. I'll put him up after midnight tonight. I just interviewed him. He's a former K Street attorney who invented the Economic Collapse blog. Funny you brought that up. His work's all over the Internet.
No, I've seen Michael's work. We interviewed him one time back, I don't know, it's maybe a year since we had Michael on here, but we interviewed him on the program one time, maybe a year ago, something like that.
Smart guy.
One of the things. One of the things is, and very articulate and prolific. I mean, it's hard to match. It's hard for me to even imagine how he writes as much as he does. But that being aside, here's a question.
Encyclopedia.
We've got the central banks. The United States Federal Reserve, for example, has held their primary interest rate down around 0.25% for most of the past 6-8 years. That's bad for the Wall Street banks and the rest of the banks in the country. They try to make their money by lending and charging interest rates. It cuts into their profits for sure, and it's hurt them badly. And now we're talking about negative interest rates. And this is going to be, this will be terrible for the Wall Street banks and for probably the banks out on the street, conventional banks. Is it reasonable to speculate that the central banks are not really working with the Wall Street banks, that the central banks are separating themselves from the balance of the banks in this country, and they are working against them? Because it does seem like they've been hurt badly by 0.25% interest.
The central banks are all the Fed is owned by a consortium of private bankers. And so Goldman and anybody, just take a look at who the primary dealers of treasuries are, and that basically are the people who own the Federal Reserve. Just look at who the primary dealers of treasuries are. I think there's 20. MF Global was a primary dealer of treasuries, and they looked in, they went under. But that's my rule of thumb, who is being hurt. I think what it signals is that it's so desperate and so dire, and they've already agreed to bail-ins, and negative interest rates would be a form of bail-in. Think about if you took 1 or 2% of all the wealth deposited in the G20. Think about that. I mean, you're talking about payrolls. You're not talking about people that have a $250,000 insurance cap. You're talking about, the big corporations that need payrolls every week, every month. You're talking about they have way more than $250,000, and they have to facilitate money and spending and capital improvements and payrolls and way in excess of any kind of a insurance limit. And I think it's a sign that things are so hideous that they have to consider this as the first line of a bail-in to just take depositor money, because they want the money to be worth something, because if they just print it and hand it to people, then you will get hyperinflation, which I think we're going to end up with anyway. I just think it's very dire and desperate, and people should continue to plan and buy things in the physical world. And I don't mean just gold and silver. I mean water, food, tires for your car, just anything physical you should acquire. And I sound like a prepper, but I just don't see this ending well. Even David Stockman, who wrote The Great Deformation, best-selling author, number four in the best-selling authors list, is on my site, David Stockman. He's 160,000 views. He was a former White House budget director. And you guys will perk up with this. At the end of the interview, I said, what about gold? And I didn't know what he was going to say, because I don't really reveal exactly what I'm going to say ahead of time. I don't ask about where did the Girl Scout cookie money go to. But and he said, surprisingly, that I said, would you be a buyer of gold? And he said, yes, when this Keynesian, basically, I'm paraphrasing, when this Keynesian experiment ends and it's going to end in a disaster, that you should have gold. This is a guy that says that there's going to be great deflation, which is bond destruction. And that you should go long the dollar. I even asked him, I said, well, how can you go long the dollar if the dollars are based off the Treasury bonds, and we printed all these bonds, and now the Fed ESF, the Exchange Stabilization Fund, is liquefying this debt because people need some money, countries that invested in the Treasury bonds, and that the bonds, the Federal Reserve notes, are issued relative, based off the Treasury bonds. How are the notes, the dollars, the notes going to be any good if the bond debt's no good? And he said you should have gold, basically.
Yeah.
That gold will go up. You should listen to the end of the interview. It's pretty stunning. You guys, Melody, a question for you. Are you having trouble getting gold and silver coins?
Melody, why don't you hold off on that question until we get back? Melody, we can start with that question when we return from our commercial break. which we'll start right now. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. We're talking to Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hey folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Our guest is Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. Some of the best videos you can find on the internet are there. When we broke for commercials, Greg was asking Melody if she was having any trouble getting gold or silver. And Melody, what's your story, Molly?
No, there really is no problem getting product for either gold or silver. Now, if you're looking at the gold Swiss francs and the British sovereigns, only because the demand in Europe has been so strong, you know, there's a little delay on those if people are looking to buy Swiss francs and British sovereigns. But as U.S. coins and so forth, there really isn't any delays. 90% silver because that comes from a secondary market. Sure, you can have days where I can get, you know, 6-7 bags in and, you know, tomorrow no one has anything. So, I mean, it's really hit and miss with the 90% silver, especially when you see the price of silver move up like we've seen. People are holding on to it. They're not ready to sell yet. So that can be a little bit of a problem, 90%. From day to day. But American Gold Eagles, Canadian Maple Leafs, Silver Eagles, there really hasn't been any delays in any of the product. However, what people have to understand, it can take one little event to change that overnight. I can remember in 2008, 2009, $20 gold pieces. I mean, they were going up. You know, I saw moves $300, $400, $500 on those coins on an $80 move in gold. I was placing people on hold while I was trying to buy product, and they'd go up $20, $30 just on the phone call. So, I think what we're going to experience will exceed what we experienced in 2008, 9, and 10. So, but people have been. It's common for them to call the gold and silver has always been there. You know, maybe they had to change from one product or another. I don't think they've really experienced an extended period of time to where product was difficult to get. But I do believe it can be gone overnight. It is that small of a market. And that's when other problems arise, too. People won't get their product. You know, dealers know that there's no product, and they're going to be promising, oh, well, yeah, we have it. Just send us your money. And then people will be getting phone calls saying, well, we had to convert, or we had to change your order to this, or, you know, it's another 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 6 months, and no, we can't send your money back. So there's going to be a lot of problems in this market. And
But they're not here right now.
They're not here right now.
Yeah.
Some places they are.
In fact, what are the commissions for, Go ahead.
You sent me
an email.
Betty sent me an email from a dealer up in, you know, the Northwest where they're not delivering. And, you know, they've been around for a while and they've never delivered. It amazes me that they're in business. We see, you know, dealers going out of business all the time because they're, you know, they speculate on the market. The market changes rapidly. And the next thing you know, you have new money that is paying for old product. And they get in a bind. And the next thing you know, they're trying to sell product at wholesale. You can't do it. And the next thing you know, they're out of business, and people lose lots and lots of money.
So you got to be careful, and you got to deal with someone that you can trust.
What did you say, Greg?
I agree with you, Alfred and Melody. What are the commissions on Silver Eagles now that you're charging? If it's not really, ballpark.
It changes in volume, but you're probably looking around $3. $3 to $3.50,
okay.
Sometimes a little lower depending on volume. And I've done comparisons online. I wanted to share with the listeners with some of the online sellers, the big, and we're always less expensive than the online sellers of gold and silver. Always.
Well, you're certainly less expensive eBay. eBay prices are so high, it's really remarkable. I look at them from time to time, and they're much higher than prices on the street, prices over the balance of the internet, and prices that Melody provides. I mean, eBay is high, but they're paying it. People are paying those prices, which is evidence
that
this market can go higher, and significantly higher, and there are people who are not afraid to pay more money. And I don't know what to say other than, you know, the pressure is building. You can see it happening, and everyone can see it happening. And just how big, how fast is it going to go? There's the questions. Let's move it on a little bit.
Gold and
go ahead, Greg.
Gold at 10:40 or 10:50 in December. Now it's 12. You know something. It's up today. I think it's at 12. It's, I don't know, 12:25 or something. What is it today?
Yeah, roughly. I think that's roughly correct.
12:27.
That's a big move from December to now.
Yeah.
From December to now, 10:50 roughly to 12:27 is a pretty dang big move, isn't it?
Yeah, if you've got yourself a stack of coins, you should be pretty happy. The last 2 months should make you pretty pleased. With you sit back and say, whoa, was I smart to get some gold or silver? I'm really a smart guy because right now it's up, from 1060, I think it was at the first of the year.
You know, what's interesting, Greg, as I was telling Al during the break, I says there still really isn't any fear in these markets. It's just, I'm thinking I need to get some gold. There, which, you know, with prices at this level, it's a steal for both gold and silver. But we haven't we haven't really seen much. People are just thinking it's going to go on.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that's the case? Why is there no fear in this market?
I'll tell you why, because,
and that's a question for either Melody or Greg, whoever wants to answer it.
Let Greg answer it.
Ladies first. I'll tell you what I see on the site. I see this comment. Oh, they can do this forever. They can continue to manipulate the markets forever. And, they won't let that happen. And Michael Pinto beautifully framed this idea. And that was that the real bubble is in confidence in central banks.
And he's exactly
the central
right.
Yes, and up until Lehman Brothers, I mean, think about that. They didn't want that to happen. That wasn't what they wanted. There was in no way that they wanted to scramble to Congress and we need $700 billion. They didn't want to do that, which was a bait and switch, total huge fraud, Henry Paulson. You should be ashamed of yourself. But this whole thing like Melody says, it can end overnight. Let me tell you, if we have a Deutsche Bank turns into Lehman on steroids, and that's what it would be, or the Italian banks. There are Italian banks that... There are so many ways, so many black swans that have hatched out of their little eggs and are just waiting to take flight. They're all over there. I'm just talking about the banking system, or you get a huge hedge fund that gets into severe trouble, or you and incidentally, these low interest rates are killing insurance companies and pension funds. You know, you talk about the fixed income market, these low interest rates, and if they go negative, I mean, it's already killing insurance companies right now. Because they look for safe returns to deposit money, and they have to hold the money in a safe place, and this is putting lots of pressure on not just banks but financial institutions and people who have invested in the oil market and insurance companies and hedge funds. This is very dicey, and everybody thinks that central banks can hold all this together, and I think that's a fool's errand. And to Melody's point, the day the Deutsche Bank comes out and says, we're not opening our doors today, oh my goodness, that's going to change in not overnight, it's going to change in about 3 minutes. Yeah, and what I suspect will happen is what has happened in the past. Anybody selling gold and silver, they start saying limit up, $100 days up in gold, and you know, $15, $20 up, or $10 or $5 up in silver, or some crazy amounts of unbridled upward movement, and they're going to play the market with their inventory. They're not going to still get run out there, oh, sure, it's probably going to go sky high right now, but sure, I'll sell you all my silver out of my inventory, and I don't know if I can replace it. That ain't going to happen. I think if we start getting these real violent, big, I don't mean, you know, 50 cents in silver today and 15 bucks, 20 bucks, even 50, 60 bucks in gold, we start getting big, big moves, unbridled moves, and you start hearing banks moving in. The banks are already moving into the space, incidentally, folks. Big banks are moving into the physical, you know, gold and silver space. And I think the confidence in central banks will be over in a very short amount of time. And it will be because it's a math problem. The math problem is we can't even service the bonds that we've produced. We didn't print money. We printed bonds, and we can't even service to that. Look at Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is your proverbial canary in the bond coal mine. They got $71 billion in debt. They can't make the payments. Just make the payments. Forget about paying it back. They can't pay the interest.
Yep.
And that's what you have.
You know, I just want to make clear to the public, or to the audience, that you were right when we asked why is there no fear, and when you said it's because people are confident that the Fed can continue to manipulate the market and guarantee the markets will rise and investors will profit. That's why there's no fear. I have no doubt that that's a fundamental reason for it. But if the confidence in the Fed's ability to manipulate the markets fails, you can bet the markets are going to fall right to the floor. Yeah. And it'll probably
will.
And people are going to say, oh, my gosh. I mean, it'll be something to see. So in any case, you're exactly right, in my opinion. The Fed, people believe the Fed's got it all under control.
Yep.
They can handle it. And I see no evidence to support that opinion. What's the rationale behind negative interest rates?
That is a last-ditch effort and a backdoor tax banking bailout before they actually say, we're just going to steal your money. That's what negative interest rates are. And I still think that'll have real negative implications all across the spectrum. When people find out what they're going to, I'm going to deposit $100 and in a year I'm going to get $90 back or $98 or whatever. I mean, you know, and I think it'll be immediate. I think if you deposit that money, it'll have to be immediate. They're not going to do that over. It's going to be something that happens immediately because they're going to need the money immediately.
Have you seen the report in the news that they have sold out all of the safes in Japan that were for sale have been sold out? That was a report out today, I saw a comment a day or two ago, and we talked about it. It's because the Japanese people, they announced there's going to be negative interest rates, and they're saying, no, not for me, there's not. I'm going to take my cash, I'm going to put it in the safe, and put the safe in the closet or wherever. They're not going. They are rejecting. Japanese people are rejecting negative interest rates. They're saying, we'll keep the stuff, we'll keep our cash at home, and it's safe.
And that is a nation of savers, Japanese.
Yeah, I know.
That's how they were able to do what they did for so long, is that they were able to borrow their own money internally. They were able to borrow yen inside of Japan for such a long time. And just, you know, that'd be like, that's like financing the federal government by saying to everybody in America, hey, everybody, buy our treasury bills. Well, nobody's got any damn money. Everybody's got a credit line and a credit card and a stupid phone, excuse me, smartphone. And they don't have any money. And when credit dies, I mean, this is going to get so ugly, so fast. That's what happened with Lehman Brothers, is that nobody trusted the collateral. Nobody trusted the credit. Nobody trusted the collateral. I think in the end, and this would be the last thing I'm going to say, I tell people, don't look at it like, oh, it's going to go up in dollars. It's going to be the only portable collateral that's there. You know, it's going to be collateral. Think about the collateral, the bonds that we were talking about, how we didn't print money yet. We printed bonds, and that's the collateral. And then we're going to find out that we've been told debt is money, and I've said this before, I'll say it again, and debt is an asset. We're going to find out neither is true. Debt is not an asset. Asset, collateral. Think in terms of collateral. Yep. And that's when I think things really turn ugly. And forget about whether or not you're going to make money in dollars. Think about collateral. And I think the collateral is going to get corrupted horribly, and people are going to end up with no pensions, no savings, their money locked up in their quote-unquote 401k, big losses. You're going to be forced into the treasury market. The collateral. Think of collateral outside the banking system, and that's gold and silver and land and artwork and food and water and, you know, PB.
Anything tangible.
Periodic symbol for lead.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why gun sales have gone crazy in background checks, because everybody knows in their heart that things are not good. That's why you have this run towards personal protection and firearms, and that's evidenced by the record amount of background checks done in 2015, record amount of gun sales, record amount of background checks and gun sales, in pretty much record in the beginning of 2016. That's what that's all about. People know, the collective knows something ain't right.
Yep.
And nothing's been fixed. There's all this debt. And when debt needs to be washed out, and oh, is that going to be painful? And that's when you better have collateral. You better have your collateral in a safe place without counterparty risk. That's the deal.
Yep. Which means you want collateral that's physical rather than mere paper promises to pay. All right? Anytime you got a piece of paper says his piece of paper is worth $100,000, guess what? You have an IOU. You have a promise to pay. You don't have a payment. When this thing goes down, the promises are going to collapse. We're out of time, folks. I want to thank Greg Hunter
for being
on the program with us. Greg Hunter is from USAWatchdog.com. Please stop and visit whenever you get a chance. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and Greg Hunter. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.